Well, welcome everyone to another edition of the NatCon Australia podcast. My guest today is Amy Therese, a well-known online political and social commentator. I think it is fair to say Amy is not as well-known in her homeland as she should probably be. By her own admission, she's not appeared on any mainstream media in Australia. She has, however, a prolific following on X, has interviewed incoming Vice President JD Vance, possibly the only Australian to have done so, and is followed by many leaders of the online right in the United States and globally. Today, we discuss a bit of her background and how she sees herself, the divide and interaction between the online right and the normie press, sexual dynamics and how they play out in politics, what is driving censorship and cancellation, and much, much more. I think you'll enjoy our discussion. Well, welcome Amy Therese to the NatCon Australia podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Glad to have you here. I was looking, unlike other guests where they have information online and can be easily described, you're a little bit more difficult to pin down. And I was just thinking, if you were invited to your high school, which I think was a fairly classy one from memory, I won't name it, in Sydney, and you're asked to give a valid speech to the year 12ers, how would you describe yourself and what you do?
I'm a clown. I'm clearly a clown. I don't really think there's any other way to describe it. I'm a clown for I just amuse myself all day on the internet. It's ridiculous type of job.
I was gonna say a social and political commentator, because you do a lot of that.
I mean, there's that. People use the term pundit, which I find repulsive. I don't know. I don't even take this. I know I'm supposed to take it seriously, but I don't know. I have trouble taking it all that serious. Myself seriously, take what I do seriously, take my friends seriously. And I'm pretty good at assessing things, one of the best, but I try to I don't know, it's funny that you mentioned that you couldn't find much about me online. It's after a few years ago, I very self-consciously made myself media unfriendly just to sort of keep the mainstream journalists away. It's a very tactical move, of change. Yeah, you change the way you speak and start using a more subcultural speak that makes no sense to journalists, and you sort of say and do things that are that they can't interpret, so they're not sure if you're doing something very naughty or not, and so they just sort of stay away just in case.
Was saying to my family over the parents over the Christmas holidays that it's almost like a test. If you know who Amy Therese is, you're probably spending too much time online.
Way too much.
But at the same time, for an Australian audience, and not to downplay yourself, as I said to you, you're probably the only Australian journalist or commentator or whatever you want to describe yourself who's interviewed JD Vance, the Vice President of the United States. He knows who you are. He doesn't know who Greg Sheridan is, Archer is, or all these other Australian journos. So,
That's really a sign of the times, isn't it? What a funny thing. Yeah, no, he and I have been mutuals for years and years on Twitter. And then, a couple of years ago when he was running for the Senate in Ohio, we just had him on, because I'd been meaning to have him on the show for ages, actually. And then we just had him on and just had a pretty general discussion. It was nice. He's honestly reminded me of my smart, right-wing friends. Easy to talk to.
Well, he's incredibly, I think there was an article a while back in the lead up to the presidential election, and they focused on who he follows online, and your name came up amongst other people, and people were all shocked about the people that he followed, because they were, there were some edgy types, and I can't think of that many Australian politicians that would even know half the people that were mentioned in that article.
They'd have no idea.
Have you ever, that's odd, right? Because, have you ever been reached out to by a mainstream media organisation in Australia for
The closest that would be mainstream would be a few years ago. I did a couple of episodes of Tom Ballard's podcast.
Yeah.
But that was solely because he happened to listen to my podcast. It certainly wasn't like via a media organization or anything. No. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but surely, I mean, you know, we always, there's always these crosses to Washington for some, you know, short take on what's going on or.
Oh, yeah. Surely. But they're always just, they're clowns. They just pick up, like, they just basically, like, the Australian media, including the public broadcaster, basically just prints, like, the CNN party line from the Democrats. Like, it's just, they don't even diverge from it at all.
Yeah. Just
I find kind of shocking. Like, as taxpayers, you would think that they would have an obligation to present, like, not fair and balanced, but at least something that's not just, like, a completely, like, one-sided bias narrative that like only looks at one party as legitimate and the others as completely illegitimate cranks and paints them as villains. Like that half this country is, you know, right, center right at least. Like, and it's just unreasonable to like to be paying taxes to support a public broadcaster that's just skewing things in an illegitimate fashion. It's like not right. I don't know. Sorry. I know that sounds corny, but like.
No, that's. I agree. Like, doesn't it also show like a sort of lack of curiosity or a lack
of
awareness about what you've got? This person who's mutuals with JD Vance, who interviewed JD Vance, who has also, you know, beyond that one interview, you've got an influence in the online right in the US. I mean, you know, without all due modesty, that's the truth, and far more than any Australian journalist, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, it just happened by accident. Like initially, I thought I was a leftist a number of years ago, but it was only through like every time I opened my mouth about any issue and saw what they were saying, I was like, these people have absolutely lost it. Like, why are they saying that? That's not right. And so, you know, it's sort of, you know, you learn by doing. And as much as I thought I was a lefty when I was in Australia, I guess. It's sort of easy to imagine yourself that because we're so much less culturally sort of like polarized and like, I don't know, even when I discussed stuff with my friends when I was younger, like I think part of it also is that I grew up in a conservative context without knowing that's what it was. And so like you absorb certain things and then you grow up in a certain environment, you think that you believe certain things, but then like, when they're actually like tested meaningfully, you're like, wait, no, these people seem kind of awful and like, and I don't agree with them about this, this and this. Like, yeah, I don't know, it's strange. It was a strange experience. But anyway, the point being that like it was only through being like pilloried by the left-wing media in the States that like I discovered the hard way that actually like I'm not left-wing at all. Like, yeah, so
who don't know your background, and I'm a little unclear about the history, you at least in theory started off as, well, is it true? Like, I mean, a Marxist-y type of perspective, and then you kind of left that or discovered.
To the extent that I was a Marxist, it was kind of like my grandparents on both sides are working class. My grandpa's a tiler. My family just come from like very humble working class roots. And so my thing was always like, I think everyone should have a fair go. Like I'm quite Australian like that. Like everyone should have a fair go. I hate the idea of people like not having healthcare, but like after a little while I realized like, number one, you can't transpose like assumptions about Australian politics onto US politics. They don't map neatly on and you'll kind of screw it up if you do that. And then the other thing was just like, I realized that my conception of Marxism was something that I'd come to in my own head while reading it myself. But then as soon as you talk to these people, it's like, well, it doesn't actually matter. Like what I interpreted a text to say matters what they're doing and what they believe and what they support. And like, I'm not trying to argue for my conception of something being correct. Like I just... this is not for me. Like we don't agree, so there's no point sort of arguing over the meaning of a 150-year-old text. I just thought that people should have a fair go and like not be screwed over. But I think that like the populist right is actually the side that taps into that sentiment anyway. Like the left sort of exploits it, but then there's so much like anti-white racism and just like this other weird identity stuff there that just, yeah, no, I prefer like something more universalizing rather than.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear when you, to anyone who follows your Twitter account, you are well versed in political analysis and political theory as well, right? And do you think?
Yeah, I'm lucky. I do have the theoretical background. It makes it easier to think conceptually.
Without getting too wonky with the talk, but I can tell you've drunk deeply from sort of you know the lingo regarding Marxist analysis and power structures and all that, and you incorporate that into your takes online.
I think it's a sort of a secret weapon in a way, like a lot of, especially like the generic, more like, you know, people who've sort of been conservatives for much of their life, like they're so used to being beautiful losers on some level that like that's sort of like an easy slipper to like just sort of slip into, and just like, I don't know, it's not easy to sort of be like be willing to be objectionable, be willing to be like hated all the time. But at the end of the day, like politics isn't about making friends. Like you should have your friends, you should be tight. But like you don't need the other people on the other side to like you. Like that literally doesn't matter at all, at all, at all. Like if you're actually defending something or advocating something, then your primary concern should be that. Like, and the people who oppose you are not going to like you. Like leftists are not going to like you, but like, who cares? Like that's not the object of this. Like, I don't know. It just seems so obvious to me, but
I think a lot of people
forget that.
Yeah, I think the other element you bring in, which I don't think more mainstream conservative types get in anywhere near the level that you do, is human psychology and human
dynamics.
Yeah, I just, you and, female behavior, but also male behavior and how that plays into particular political phenomenon, you know, the crying victim.
It's funny because like I feel as though historically, and I've joked about this with my male friends online, but I feel like historically this is the type of stuff that sort of like people's wives would sort of whisper to them, or like they would sort of give them an insight in that respect. But like now that not everyone's necessarily married and like other people are doing their own shit, like not every, like a lot of guys don't even have like a girl who will like in any way contest like this bullshit they're getting out from the mainstream media. And it's just, I don't know, I think there is like, I've at least starting with me too, like I felt a strong obligation to just I don't want to be all like I'm a girl and because I'm a woman I think this, but I do feel a sense of obligation to counter this sort of very like mean man-hating kind of vibe that has become the predominant one at the present. Just because I don't like manipulation, and I think that like when women weaponize like aspects of ourselves that I think are supposed to be sort of intimate and are supposed to mean something, like if a woman cries, like I don't want men to instantaneously like look at that with suspicion and think they're about to be played, which is why you don't want sort of women in the media and politics to weaponize that. And sort of, you know, it's like the boy who cries wolf on some level. Like I don't want men to sort of become inured to that because it's been so abused, you know, like you don't want to sort of, everything would become so brutal if they have their way and just everyone will have to be desensitized to it, you know?
Yeah, I don't think politics and male politicians know how to deal with it.
That's why women are weaponizing it in the way that they are. And like we all knew 30, 40 years ago, like all the women who came up then, they were like very much trying to not be seen as whiny crybabies in a man's world. There was like a real sense of sort of stoicism among your older like women in the professions and politics and all the rest. Whereas now that like my sort of millennials and younger seem to have recognized that they can have it both ways, you know, be professionals, be, you know, equal to men in every sense, which is an absurdity, but whatever. Anyway, putting that aside. So they do the whole equality thing, but they can have their cake and eat it too by being like totally female, being like ridiculous in the workplace, like just doing all this stuff that until 5 minutes ago, everyone knew was a no-go zone. But then like sort of flip between demanding being treated as like a serious professionals and crying their eyes out, like manipulating the men around. Like, I don't think it's right. It's just, it's not right. Like,
the cause of it is because looking at polls, it was notable in the last US presidential election, and it's the same across, you know, the Anglo-speaking world to some extent, how much single women in particular are an outlier. They voted overwhelmingly for still Kamala when the rest of the country went the other way. Why do you think that is?
In terms of their basic material interests, like just sort of basic level, like I think I don't think it's the same in Australia, but certainly in the United States, it's a very real gender polarization, specifically with single people more so than married. Actually, single and divorced are the two most consistently polarized. But the point being that once you get a certain, like, once one party has like a core constituency as one that it starts to cater to, then it actually does start to make a lot of sense to vote for the party that's pandering to you. Like, if they're going to do a bunch of things that make your life easier, then it makes perfect sense to vote for them. So if you sort of get this constituency group politics of that variety, then it sort of feeds upon itself. But I think it's other things too. I think part of what's going on is that, like, women are very mimetic creatures. Like, we sort of follow fashion and trends and like examples that we see, and I think it's a good thing generally to sort of want to fit in with your surroundings. It's like we want to sort of accommodate ourselves to this situation that we're in, and so like we do tend to imitate others, and I think a lot of what's happening is that, like, rather than accommodating ourselves to like physical communities in the way that we once might have, you know, where you'll be more accommodating towards your neighbors, like literally your neighbors. I think what's happening now is that, like, the sort of women's affective empathy and desire to sort of fit in or whatever is being activated by the media and through these sort of like cultural apparatuses that then sort of mean that you have this like mass like community that's like not actually a community. It's basically like women are sort of kind of becoming kind of clones of one another, which, again, like, if you look historically and even just at women's biology, like, there is like a lot of incentives for women to sort of act as a pack rather than a non-pack, because like women can't defend themselves. There is a sort of like cartel utility in like leveraging their power together rather than separately. So it's sort of, it makes sense on some level, but it is a little like novel to see this like just, yeah, real lack of individuation, and like everyone, like a lot of women just sort of like get their politics like they won't learn it from the TV. Like, they'll sit there and watch like the Rachel Maddow show and all these other ones, man, and it's just like, I don't know, just I think it does sort of hypnotize people to the extent that, like, you'll just hear this people saying the same line as though it was like something they thought up, and it's just like, you, that's like, that's from TV. It's just so strange. I don't know. I think that
it's interesting in its own terms, female psychology, human psychology, and the rest of it, but in a pure kind of getting votes perspective, it's important, because I increasingly think trying to appeal to female voters drives the politics, like all messaging.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like anything, you need to sell it to the like the the 25 to 50 year old women, and then you've got the whole thing made. Yeah, absolutely. Like any product, that's the first. But the other thing is that, like, I think part of what's also happening with social media, it's like, it's not just dickheads like me who are doing something sort of political there. It's that most people have some form of social media, be it Facebook, Instagram, like any one of myriad social media outlets. So most of us are like expressing ourselves in one way or another, like via at least one form of social media. And so if you attach this sort of like social value and almost like religious fervor to these things that, like, you know, you can't be a good person unless you're seen to be, you know, testifying like to the latest whatever, then that also creates like a real snowball, like exponential spread of anything, like as we saw with the George Floyd things and all the rest of it. And I think, like, as people become less religious, like civic religion sort of takes on a greater task in that, like, meaning making for people. So, like, you know, I think a lot of the woke thing was like, yeah, people are sort of looking to areas where they might not have put so much emphasis on it previously in terms of defining whether or not they're a good person, but this sort of seems to be filling that gap for a lot of people. And I think that's what also compels certain things.
Because, like, go on.
No, because I was just thinking, like, there were all sorts of other things that weren't digital in that way in the past. Like, you had Neighborhood Watch, you had, like, Parents and Teachers Associations, like, all these, like, active sort of, like, civil society groups or whatever. And it seems there's a lot of what happens digitally is sort of replications of previous institutions are sort of reoccurring in certain ways. And I think that's part of what's going on there as well. Like, a lot of these sort of like women's groups where historically women would just sort of sit and gas bag with one another, and it just didn't really have these like massive ramifications. Whereas now, like, if you're seen to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing, it'll sort of haunt you. So people are even more cognizant of not sort of sticking their head up above the parapet, like as a female, I mean. Conforming becomes more necessary.
Yeah, I mean, the social media at one level is a mob-inducing device, right? It creates campaigns.
Absolutely.
And it's hard, as we see with COVID and a whole, you know, BLM over the rest, it's hard to push back against that when the mob gets its...
Like you weren't following me a few years ago when I was getting it from the left, but, like, that was a trial by fire when they were... I wasn't asking for it, but I was certainly being like, I was dissenting, and I knew what I was getting into, really. But it was still very like new to me. Like, I've never been bullied. Like, it was a very novel thing. And like, you don't really know how to respond either. Like, it just is, yeah, it was weird, but it was a good learning curve, I think, in the long run. Luckily, I'm pretty sturdy. Like, I don't think others have it. Like, I was also protected by the fact that I was in another country too. Like, so I had other friends who, they, you know, they wrote one article or one book at the wrong time, and they just got, yeah, like, destroyed by the media and the left and the like witch hunting that goes on. Like, I'd really not seen anything like that before. It sort of helped me understand how, like, those sorts of dynamics have played out in the past, like, offline. Like, suddenly it wasn't untenable to me to see how, like, certain, yeah, like, witch hunting and, what was it, the tulip crisis, all those, like, just crazy things that people do in mobs and crowds. I was just like, oh, okay, I think I understand this now. Because people get really dumb in those things.
Yeah. No, I was thinking, there's a Abraham Lincoln. He wrote one of his first major speeches when he's a young congressman or congressman to be, the Lyceum Address. He literally says, "It's not going to be a Napoleon or someone else who takes down the United States. We're going to do it to ourselves, and we'll do it because of mob rule. Mobs will take charge." And I was thinking, in this day and age, this is what would he make of social media, right? You know, I don't know.
I wonder whether it, like, whether maybe it helps people. Like, I'm never quite sure, but sometimes I wonder whether, like, maybe it's better that, especially with some of the more, like, mentally, like, not quite there people, I'm like, well, maybe it's better that they're just being a shithead on the internet, you know? Like, maybe this is actually harm minimizing. I don't know. Like, it's probably better that they do that than, like,
don't take it the wrong way, but what would you do were X not available or Twitter not available? I mean, would you write LinkedIn?
I think that you should only write books if you have something, like, very much worth saying at book length. I think a lot of people my age write a book because we've all had, I don't say we've all, but people of a certain, like, notoriety online have all at one point or another had a publisher approach us and basically want to flog what, you know, our little online brand into, like, a book. Like, you should write a book if you have a book's worth of something to say. Like, I'm not convinced that I'm sufficiently, like, expert or whatever to write. I mean, I could, but I just want to wait till I was inspired rather than like forcing it to build a brand. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm allergic to that sort of thing.
we've got no shortage of things to say, so I'm sure you could do it if you wanted to be, like, structuring the rest of it.
Yeah. My grandma would say, talk under 10 feet of wet cement.
do you think, Amy, like, I think we had a brief chat about this when we caught up in Sydney, but do you think there's a problem with all of the really, you know, edgy and interesting conversations that happen on X and other places and then being kind of siloed from what goes on in, let's call it, the normie press or the because I'm just struck by sometimes discussions I have with people that aren't on X or Twitter. They have no, like, the gulf is sometimes bigger than I assume. They have no idea about
things that have been to death. It is. I think you're quite right. But one thing I've found that surprised and then also, like, pleased me in some sense was that, like, I don't know that this would happen on the left, but I have found on the right, especially, like, so I've got a cousin who works on, like, super yachts, and he's, like, a couple years, maybe, like, a year and a half older than me, relatively, like, right wing, but he's, like, total, like, he's never been on any kind of, like, online social media bullshit. Like, I'm pretty sure he has an Instagram to share with, like, his, you know, his high school friends or whatever, but that's it. Like, I'll describe things or talk about ideas or whatever, and he won't have the same, like, vernacular, but he'll, like, instantly know what the fuck I'm talking about, like, immediately. And he's, you know, white guy who's, like, a year older than me. But so it's sort of, like, it makes sense that, like, because what we're talking about is usually reality-based, even if people don't have the same terminology, like, quite often I find, like, guys who are of the right will pick, like, that they'll get it even if they're not using the same language. Whereas I feel like with a lot of the leftist stuff, like, because it's not reality-based, like, there's no hope. Like, people can't organically come to their positions, like, of their own accord, whereas at least with ours, like, trying to talk about, like, internet law with people who aren't online is, like, it's never gonna happen. It makes no sense. But, like, at least if you're talking, like, things related to politics, like, they're hopefully not going to be these sort of, like, such small concepts that they're just this online stuff. Like, you know, the H-1B argument, for example, that was happening online a couple of weeks ago, like, yeah, online was the precipice of that, like, contentious, like, tussle or whatever, but that was very much stuff that you could, like, discuss with people who were offline, I think.
But it just wasn't, for example, those two things that excited the online right, if that's what we call it, during sort of this break. The H-1B visa stuff and the grooming gangs in the UK. That, I mean, there was nothing in the Australian press, much at all, if anything, on the H-1B stuff. And there was a little bit later on. And meanwhile, the whole discussion with like Elon telling, you know, Keir Starmer to resign and the back and forth. I mean, that Sky News, I don't believe, covered that at all. This is in Australia. I mean, where people get that information or even be aware of it?
Well, like, do you know what I think is actually happening? Is that, like, historically, what we would have had would be, like, a bunch of news outlets that function as, like, clearinghouses for current affairs. And then we also would have had, like, because effectively, like, society kind of does replicate online without even trying to. Like, invariably, like, most of my friends online are very much within my age group, IQ range, and like social class, and like I that's not even deliberate. Like most of the guys I'm friends with online either started out as anons or are still anons, so like it's not as if, and so you only get to know all these specific like facts about them through being friends for years. Like it's not as if you sort of, you know, attract one another on that basis, and yet you still find yourself sort of doing this assortative grouping that like kind of, you know, like attracts like or whatever. So I don't know why I'm talking about that. What was it in relation to?
Well, it was just in the big divide between the, let's call it the normie press and the online right. Like
part of what's happening is like basically like sort of the elite sort of like chattering classes, where previously this would have happened with the like social, like just in sort of like social groups and social networks, that's kind of replicating but online. And so like the extent to which like sort of what people like what is going to become relevant will be whatever sort of like is diffused out of that. It's not so much that it's like necessarily a current affairs producing thing, it's more like there's sort of like consensus that gets settled or like a thing that gets settled like within this particular class. And then once they determine where they're at, then that influences like the media and publications and that sort of thing. I saw the left doing this a few years ago, like when the left was going batshit crazy on the woke stuff, they would actually have these meaningful, like big battles online between factions of the left. And then it was like following, you know, any specifically like big brouhaha, then that became sort of like the normative like thing that they were all on board with. But it was contested online at first. And then, you know, for the next 5-6 years, that became the norm among like all the press. Like So I think there's something going on there that's not quite the same as sort of the day-to-day news. It's sort of like there's a social thing going on and a consensus forming thing going on within a certain like influential class of people, if that makes sense.
It does. I mean, journalists are online a lot more probably than the average, and on Twitter in particular.
Definitely, excuse yeah.
That's right.
Although but, they've allegedly gone to Blue Sky or whatever.
They'll be back because it'd be too boring. But it's inexact, this transfer of debates and information, I think. And actually one example now that I think about it, I mean, we had a discussion and you've really tapped into US politics, but I mentioned to you, Moira Deeming, and that name didn't really mean much to you. Whereas I imagine if anyone, no, that's right. I mean, and I wasn't sure whether you're kind of trying to be like Yoko Ono, Yoko Ono to Don Lennon.
Like,
you famously said, I don't know who you are. That's like Sky News and mainstream, and anyone reading the kind of like, you know, normie press in Australia would immediately know who that is.
I used to just like be up with Australian politics. Like I was a total politics nerd growing up. Maybe as late as like 2010 or 2011, I was still watching, what's that Sunday show again? Insiders. I used to watch that with my dad. Okay. Yeah. But I just, Insiders and what's the other one? The Monday night one with Tony, what's his face? Like that stuff just makes me want to throw a brick through the television. Like it's just unpleasant and like it. I have no beef with boomers, like, overall, but, like, I don't know. I just, I really need to hear what the guy from the Financial Review thinks and a guy from Quadrant and like 10 females from The Guardian. Like, I don't give a shit, frankly.
I'm the same. They bore me to tears, but the,
yeah,
they do influence the kind of lever pullers in power in Australia, I think. I mean, I don't think in Australia, I mean,
they do, you know, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, the
few little tete-a-tetes that I had with, like, Australian politics stuff, it was all just so parochial and dumb. Like, and these people, I just couldn't deal with it. Like, I feel like I'm too annoying for Australian politics. I just get myself in so much trouble in such a small pond. Because at least in the States, it's like, I'm not, like, the most objectionable person there. You know what I mean? I'm like... because there's other much bigger personalities, whereas in Australia I just feel like I'll just be like a storm in a teacup, you know. Like,
I think Amy, if you put yourself to it, you know, it'd be an interesting TV to see Amy Therese rather than Annabelle Crabb do a kitchen cabinet with, you know,
that would actually be so fun. I think
or like a Sky News take from Amy, what's going on in the States, Amy, rather than, you know, the usual sort of talking point stuff.
Funny, maybe I should do that, get back in touch with my university contacts and
I mean, on the more redeeming stuff you don't know about, but you do know about, like, the gender wars and people, men who think they're women and all the rest of it globally, right?
There's all that stuff, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
There is, just going back to what we were talking about before, what I've noticed is there's a age divide. Like, you get older, you know, Germaine Greer types and J.K. Rowling's and others, they are much more inclined to say, oh, no, that's ridiculous. Who could possibly think that a man is a woman? But then you get the younger women who are much more kind of like, oh, no, obviously they can, you know, men can be women and vice versa. Well,
in relation to, like, how I think about it, and I could be totally wrong because, like, I'm not a feminist. I've never considered myself a feminist. It never made any sense to me. Like, I grew up, like, my dad was as liberal as the next guy in terms of, like, just how all middle-class guys with daughters are like this now, where they're like, you know, you can do anything, honey. Like, don't, you know, don't hold yourself back for trying what you need, all the rest. So, like... And I went to an all-girls high school where, like, we could do anything, like, within reason, obviously. And I'm lucky enough to have been born with a good brain. So, like, I've never felt I felt actually quite the opposite of in any way oppressed. I feel like my entire life, every institution is, like, rolling out a red carpet for women and females to, like, it almost, like, seems unfair in some sense, like, that it's like, well, why should you be giving all these, like, special pleading to women? Like, I don't want to get there on the basis of being a woman. I want to get there because I'm good enough, and I don't, but anyway, that's just my thinking. But anyway, the point being that when I hear women my age talk about, like, oppression and the patriarchy, I don't know, like, I've always just found that I feel like I'm on another planet. I don't get it. Like, I know how we grew up, like, in the 90s and early 2000s. Like, that's never existed. Like, not in my entire lifetime. Like, stop it. So, but they've seemed to have, like, deluded themselves into thinking they have some big social justice cause in virtue of being female. The older women who are sort of, like, the radical feminists or whatever, so at least the way I saw it, it's like, well, feminism, if it was ever relevant, it's like, its work is done. Like, been there, done that. Like, I grew up in a society where that was never an issue. Don't need to identify with that label. Older women, I think, like, certainly someone like Germaine Greer, like her ideas, hate her ideas. Like, she's like, walked the talk or whatever, you know, like, she was there having arguments, you know, at Oxford with, like, some of the sort of, you know, leading scholars of the 20th century. Like,
she enjoyed debates, I think, with Germaine Greer,
right? Yeah. And she's good at them. Like, and I respect someone who can debate as well as debating captain at high school, that sort of thing. Like, I really do think if you're going to be advocating something, you best be able to defend it. Like that's a, I think, a valuable and like a laudable quality about a person. So I don't dislike her, even if I think she's like a lot of her ideas I disagree with, that's fine. But I do think that like people like herself who actually had to sort of like, they did fight certain battles or whatever, like, and at the very least, like they're not just like bluffing. So like I find them respectable and also funny. They didn't grow up in an era where like everyone was pandering to everyone else's feelings all the time. So like they're capable of having a laugh. Like, and I think that's a really important thing. I think being a humorless scold, like, it makes life unbearable, makes politics unbearable. Like, I don't know, it's good to be able to like interact with people and take the piss out of yourselves and each other. And I do think these sort of older feminists are capable of doing that in ways that the younger ones aren't. So, but anyway, long story short, I think basically the younger ones have deluded themselves into thinking that like they have a social justice cause in virtue of being female. But then they also lump into that like being whatever, any sort of these like imaginary female adjacent identities like non-binary or trans or whatever. Anyway, the point being that like they all get off on like being the most empathetic person, the most inclusive person, the most tolerant person, like all this nonsense, which to me like I don't know, that's not really an admirable trait. It just shows like that you have no sense and no taste. Like you should probably be a little more discerning. Like how is tolerance something to be like generically proud of tolerance? That doesn't even make any sense. That's like saying it's just saying I have no standards. Like I don't get it. That's something to like be proud of. Anyway, a lot of women do seem to think that, yeah, they fetishize like all this nonsense. And so I think that's sort of where like the big difference lies. Like older women who actually did have to do the hard yards, like people like, you know, I don't like them at all, but like Hillary Clinton, Maggie Thatcher, like they at least like walked the walk and like, you know, weren't just these big bags of crying slop that were manipulating people and crying and like just the empathy manipulation. And then being offended at everything, like it's all so silly. Like, you know, I really do think that when you lie to yourself, it's much easier to like take offense all the time. There's this sort of Dostoevsky bit from the Brothers Karamazov where he's like, you know, the person who kind of lies to himself all the time, like, and makes a habit of it, it's like eventually he can't even recognize the truth anymore. And this is the type of person who's like apt to be the most easily offended. And I think that's what's going on with a lot of these like younger women who are doing like repping all this bullshit. It's like, well, you actually haven't faced any difficulties ever in your entire life. Like you go on about oppression, but like actually everything has been handed to you and that's fine. Like I'm not saying that like people should suffer, but like there is something to be said for like a little bit of adversity making you like resilient and also just less of a whinger. Like once you've, you know, experienced a little bit of difficulty, it makes you much more appreciative of like when things that go smoothly and easily for you, like that it makes sort of engenders a sense of gratitude rather than, you know, presumptuous sort of entitlement or whatever, which I think is a lot of what goes on, like this stuff that's like pretending to be virtue, but it's just people being sort of spoiled and entitled and pretending it's like being generous of spirit or whatever. And it's just like this is not pleasant. Like I know you think you're the good guys here, but like this is pretty feral. Like I don't know if I'm making any sense.
I was reading something that, you know, this term mansplaining, which
what's it called? What's that expression where you like oh my gosh, blanking on it. No, it's gone. Just, you know, when you like when you just lean into it and like make it good. We did that with mansplaining.
Oh right, yeah, appropriate the term, whatever. Is that what
it is? Yeah, appropriate. That's it. Yeah. I love mansplaining. It's great.
But I was reading something that basically, women being critical of so-called mansplaining was them just discovering, because of the internet and podcasts and talkback, how men speak to each other naturally. And they were like, men tend to be much more direct in their engagement. And there's never, well, obviously it's a.
That's why I like guys. That's why I get on with guys.
Men don't typically say, "Oh, that's offensive. You've offended me." I mean, that I'm sure in this day and age there are.
Why would they?
No, but it's
a embarrassing.
It would be, but that is something which tends to be come females more naturally, I think, take offense. And
yeah, they do, yeah, for sure.
And I think that's probably, again, roll with me, like, is that not one of the drivers, do you think, in the crackdown of you know, freewheeling discussion on online, some of the free speech?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah, like I think it's too easy, and it skips a lot of the like specific machinations that happen to sort of, you know, look at these national security state fuckers who are like really clamping down on and using terms like misinformation, disinformation to do so. But like, there's a reason why that crazy like Mary Poppins lady was like the disinformation czar or whatever. Like Biden's disinterest. Yeah, like women love being able to silence people who are saying things they don't like. Like they love it. They really like it. And I think that like the more you do that, the more you need to do it. So like I do think that it is one of those things where like sort of you have to be pretty principled about it, because it really didn't take long from I think it was like 2018 when Milo Yiannopoulos was like one of the first people to get like totally shit canned off all social media sites. And it was done sort of, they all like colluded to do that, which in a country like the United States, where you have like a very, you know, you have a first amendment right to freedom of speech, which obviously doesn't extend to private companies. But the idea being that this is a cultural principle that is like kind of sacrosanct, like that they'd always prioritize that, and especially on the left too. You had the ACLU and all sorts of other sort of lefty long-standing institutions that prioritized, you know, your ability to say what you want, blah blah blah. But like it only took a few years then for like enormous swaths of people to just be totally like unpersoned off the internet, unable like to have any recourse, all the way up to the president, to the point where then even once people were getting kicked off all these major social media sites with the assistance of the national security state, you then had women like AOC and Ilhan Omar and all these others would like go over to Parler or Gab, search out things that they found offensive as a Muslim woman or as a Latina and all this other whatever their identities are. They would then drag it back to Twitter and then post it just so everyone could see how offensive it was. I'm like, okay, if you're actually claiming that this is offensive, like, right? Like you're so offended, you're so mortally offended that this should not be a thing. Why are you going to like this site that very few people go to and you're bringing it back to your like, what, 15, 20 million followers? Like the whole thing is such a performative contradiction that it's just hard to take seriously. And yet like the mere fact of being female and pretending to be offended seems to be enough to sort of have a whole bunch of people take you seriously. And it was the same thing with I don't know, did you see after the January 6th thing a couple of years ago, which I'm not endorsing what happened on January 6th, it wasn't smart. I don't endorse that sort of thing. I wouldn't have done it myself, but shit happens, like it, whatever. Anyway, the fact that they then had like all of the women from Congress, like the squad, all these others, they basically had like a therapy session on the floor of Congress. And it was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And I don't know how, like, I know that women think I'm a total traitor. I just don't see myself as like having a shared debt, like, a shared objective with women who behave like idiots. And like, why, I don't want to be associated with that. Like, I don't see us as sharing like a political or social cause. Like, I think these people are embarrassing. Like, I don't want anything to do with that. Like, I don't understand how they expect anyone to ever take them seriously the way they like cry and are always preaching defense, but then they're the first to silence people. But they're also then the next minute it's, oh, look, she's so powerful for clapping back. And so like they give as good as they get, but then they're the only ones who are allowed to silence anyone with these like deplatforming and I don't know. I just find it all just a very like pernicious like form of politics. Yeah, sorry.
You got kicked off Twitter, right? I mean, I don't think there's enough actually outright.
I got banned by the Democratic Party, like shit canned. Yeah, in the midst of an election. Political violence. Because I used the phrase, So somebody had written drop out E. Warren in the midst of the Democrat primary. Now, for an entire year, I'd been getting myself into all sorts of trouble by saying, Liz Warren is going to shiv Bernie, just you wait. This will happen. Like, anyway, everyone was calling me crazy for a year. Then she literally did that on main stage. And then everyone finally is like, oh my God, Amy's actually vindicated. She's totally right. Anyway, in that exact moment, so someone had said, E. Warren, drop out. And I said, she's not going to drop out. Like, she needs to be beaten. As in, like, at the polling booth.
Vanquished like, in politically rather than with a stick.
It was literally within the context of drop out. So, like, obviously, like, it was within the context of, like, an electoral contest. No, that was encouraging violence. And so boot us on.
I
I'd used that phrase previously, like a week earlier. No problem. We know, and I have enough information that I am certain. Like there's no doubt about how that happened. But it's certainly not the kind of information that I can either reveal or that would be enough to. It's too like circuitous to be able to explain, but yeah, we know that that's what it was. Yeah,
but it's so pathetic. I mean, why did they even think it would matter? Do you know what I mean? It's not like truly. There's so many like.
I thought that, but then when I do think about it, I think part of the thing with the internet, especially, is it's not so much that I have a whole lot of power or could do a whole lot. It's just that social media does give you an outsized capacity to speak at a volume that normal citizens didn't have before. And so if you speak from a decent sized platform at specific moments, then it can blow up. And so that's what I think it is. Like they need to take you down, like just to get you out of that, out of contention, like, you know, for the next 2 weeks while the primary is still running. And then they'll keep you offline for what, however long till the, you know, I literally was allowed back on like a month after Kamala and Biden got sworn in. So like, again, I don't think this is a coincidence, but whatever, it's fine. Point being though, like that there is actually, I think there is a utility to it. And when they do it this way, where it's sort of with this procedural formalism where you can't talk to anyone, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no one you can like go and even yell at, it works. It's effective. I had so many of my friends have really similar things happen to them. And like, I don't know, especially like when there's such a lockstep between the mainstream media journalists, it's like people do come to rely on like voices outside of that to counter them. And so like, if you actually have the state effectively like putting the kibosh on any specific individual they want who's saying anything they don't like, that's like some USSR type like Stasi policing. Like, you know, that's hardcore.
Well, it makes an impact too, right? Because once you're no longer online, people's memories are short and they think, Amy, she's not posting anymore. Milo, I mean, he was sort of had a major impact on his life professionally and other things, being not shut out of his preferred platform. I mean, you know, and he's back now, I think, and you know,
He is.
But
he and I are mutuals now.
Yeah, and it's it's consequential, I guess, is the point I'm making. It's not like...
It stifles that part of it also, like part of the whole cancel culture thing is strangling certain voices in the crib, like, which it very much has the effect of doing. Like, there are so many people who would have, like, you know, the kind of people who are brave enough to say things that the rest of their field may find objectionable. Most of the time, you'll find that anyone who has the balls to say anything that steps outside the pack, they'll have 10 to 15 of their colleagues messaging them in the DMs, oh, thank you so much. Like, I don't have the guts to say it, but, like, I agree with you. Just want to quietly support. Like, this happens to me every single time. Not so much now because I'm not saying anything particularly novel, but, like, in the past, yeah, you get tons of people who – quite often they would even have a much larger platform than me. And they'd be like, oh, I just want to sort of offer some moral support. It's like, that's really nice. But also, why don't you grow a pair and, like, just say what you believe to be the truth? Like, or just, like, don't tell me. Because now I sort of think you're pathetic on some level. No offense. Like, it's, you know.
It is a bit different. I mean, look, those who do journalism for a living, and I know you're not whatever, technically a journalist, but they're often encouraging people to speak out in their workplaces and do this sort of thing. And they are protected by lawyers who work for the media organization and this, that, and the other. And they don't realize there are consequences out here in the deep blue yonder. And it's not even in some cases where you're making anything. I mean, sometimes it's not illegal speech, or most of the time it's not illegal speech. Sometimes it's just talking about topics which are interesting but controversial, and you know, society is just not as mainstream. Society is just not as tapped into what the online right are talking about. And they, for example, sex, basic ones like sex differences, right? I mean, that is, you and I think, obviously there are, you know, differences and they're kind of interesting and they, you know, where they play out. But even to assert that there are, that men and women might think differently in different contexts.
Obviously. Well, we have different physiology and, like, the way we behave is different. Like, how can anyone be alive on Earth for more than 5 minutes and not notice that?
I know it's so obvious, but. Like, if you went into a mainstream corporation, you'd be kind of, I don't know, you would be ostracized, I guess.
Okay, if there's no difference, then why are we doing affirmative action? Why do you want women? Why do you want diversity?
Oh, there's all sorts of contradictions. The other one is obviously cultural differences between peoples. And, you know, they're interesting. It's an interesting topic, but it is approached. No,
when we talk about cultural differences, what we mean is we can have a nice variety of foods at the Westfield Food Court, and maybe we'll have a couple of parades. That's about it. Everyone is actually, you know, an upper middle class white liberal culturally, and that's what we mean. I don't know.
I'm 100% with you, but like you recognize the issue in a sense, right? Because I guarantee you this is not what you read in the Financial Review.
I mean, we sort of joke online, but, like, find someone far right, they have, like, an incredibly nuanced and detailed understanding of, like, different cultures other than their own, like, far more than, whereas, like, you know, you talk to liberals and, like, they all just watch that Anthony Bourdain thing where he goes to every corner of the globe and gets, like, slop from the street. It's like the same thing in every country. Like, this is how, like, certain types of people are.
I was actually went back and had a look at John Stuart Mill, what he said about speech, and it's still relevant.
Talks
about speech being restricted by the policing acceptable boundaries. That phrase actually,
yes.
And he talks about unmeasured vituperation enforced on the side of prevailing opinion deters people from expressing contrary opinion and from listening those to express them.
That's self-censorship and avoiding people who are, like, naughty. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And not wanting to even engage anything controversial, which is just literally something which can be discussed, right? Is avoided. Like, people just avoid any type of
debate. I've always found it strange insofar as, like, I figure out what I think about something by reading about it, talking about it, like thinking about it, obviously. But like my, like I don't even think of it as an objective, but just like my inbuilt, like who I am is like, well, I want to know what's true. Like what's actually going on here? Like, you know, that's just how I am. Like I'm a like interminably curious person. Like I relish like understanding things, because like once you understand something, it makes like your capacity to move through the world easier, like, and better. And I enjoy sharing things that I've learned with other people and learning from other people. And so this is just all like almost reflexive for me. But I think a lot of people, like, so I guess what I'm saying is, I don't feel like any, like, it doesn't, I don't feel like I should fear, like, being inquisitive and curious. And I don't feel like I should fear any knowledge, because it's like, well, I'll figure out for myself what I think. And what's, like, I don't, the idea of, like, being concerned with what's controversial, this doesn't even make sense to me. Like, it doesn't even, it's not a thing that has ever entered into my head, ever.
Do you think that's something that, I agree with you, and I'm on the same type of mind, but do you think it's that sentiment is actually shared by a large part of society?
I think it's shared by, like, 130 IQ, like, white men, basically. Like, very few others. Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but not really. Like, I think a certain, like, core contingent of people, like, have no interest in whether or not something's true, but, like, whether it's functional. So if something is emotionally satisfactory for them or they want to believe it, I think a huge number of people, like, that's the extent to which they will, like, if it makes them feel good, they'll be like, yeah, okay, I believe that. That's that.
I mean, T.S. Eliot has a line where he says, humankind cannot stand very much reality. And then I was reading,
no, they can't. They absolutely can't. Yeah.
I think that is true. And John Derbyshire, you know, he's an online, I'm sure you've heard of him. Yeah. He has this line where he says, the older I get, the more I think the main driving force in human affairs is not greed or lust, still less anything positive like charity or piety. It is wishful thinking. I want it to be so. Therefore, it must be so. I do think that is right.
Yeah. I mean, I can't hate on people, because on some level, like, my life would be infinitely easier if I was able to bullshit myself in that way. Like, I'm not joking. Like, I know that I should be, like, grateful for having a, you know, quick brain and, like, bit, you know, insight into this, that, and the rest. But, like, it does make life a lot easier. Like, if you can't see through people's bullshit and they don't feel like, because it makes you a threat on some level, right? Like, if you can see through people's bullshit and see the reality of things like that, then there's a lot of situations in which someone like you is going to be a pest. Like, whether you want to be a pest or not, like, it is what it is. And so, you know, like, there is, I can empathize with the idea that that is very appealing. Like, it's intuitively appealing to me, but it's just not who I am. So
I think that's pretty inclusive. I won't name it, but someone in politics here in Australia, quite successful, and she was saying, look, it would be much professionally, it doesn't make any sense to get involved in these debates. But you can't avoid it, just who you are. Like, some people just... I'd be miserable not chatting to people about these things.
I can't. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it also, like, I do think that, like, on some level, again, maybe this is me, I try not to be too grandiose about anything, but I do think on, you know, some level, like, you do have a responsibility to sort of carry what you can. And so, like, I can handle a lot more, getting a lot more grief than most people. Like, it's water off a duck's back to me. I don't care. Like, if I don't respect someone, if I don't admire someone, I don't care. Like, I don't care what they think. Like, why would I care? Whereas, like, you know, different people can get, like, way more affected by that. They sort of, like, they need, you know, a broad range of people. Like, the idea of, like, masses of people hating them or whatever, it's like, that's really overwhelming and unpleasant. And, like, I just don't care if they're not people I respect the opinion of. Like, why would I care? Like, I do think on some level, like, because I can handle more, then there is an obligation there. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people, if they can't handle the truth, then they're not going to be the ones who, like, sort of put themselves up to be, have tomatoes thrown at them for saying it, you know? So, like, it sort of is on some level, like, you kind of, there's a responsibility there on some level, I think, you know, because it makes it easier for the people after you.
I fully agree. You know? It's not simply being able to getting an, I mean, there's probably an element of that, getting an intellectual buzz for saying clever and smart things, but it's not that. No. It's not like being the best person at repartee at a dinner party. It's actually because you, it's consequential. Yeah, no, We have an obligation, I think.
Well, I think there are two types. Yeah, I think that after, like, I think the way I sort of think about it is, like, it's kind of like going through a forest where, like, you know, if you have a sword or a knife or whatever, where you actually have to clear, like, the shit in front of you to make a path. And then, like, the next person behind you, like, they may, like, be capable of doing the next bit, but it will be much easier and more pleasant for them. And so they'll probably get some more, like, rewards out of it. But basically, like, the very first person doing that, like, pioneering on some level, saying the thing when no one else is saying it, this sort of thing, like, they don't generally, like, it's only people sort of coming a little bit after that are able to capitalize on it. But, like, initially, it actually is just you're paying a certain, like, it is just you have to pay a certain price. And that's just, I just feel like that's, like, part and parcel with being given gifts. Like, sorry if that sounds corny, but, like.
Oh, this first mover advantage is a myth in many ways. It's often the second mover that comes in and.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen that in media too, is that, like, there'll be girls who will very much, they'll look at what I'm saying and use that as a barometer for how far they can go, which, again, to me is kind of cool because it then gives me, it gives me a responsibility to, like, actually tell the truth, because if I'm fudging it, if I'm being a coward, then that snowballs down the line. Whereas if I actually, you know, go as far as I can and just tell what I believe to be the truth, then if other people behind me are sort of hedging back a little bit from that, well, at the very least, they've gotten as close as they can. You know what I mean? Whereas if I'm holding back, then it moves the whole thing. Do you get what I mean?
I absolutely do. So if no one moves, I mean, even you said, you know, women are a bit more attuned to what the herd think, but everyone is to some extent.
But everyone is online, I think.
Yeah.
But and then again, I don't know. I just think, But then I do think there is value, at least for myself. Like, when I moved from the left to the right, I was cognizant of, like, this is a bit old school, but, like, I actually do think I prefer men to sort of, like, be, like, leaders politically. Like, don't get me wrong, like, obviously I think I'm totally capable and worthy of, like, you know, being, like, strategizing with the best of them, all the rest, but, like, I prefer a male, like, a head of state. I'm sorry, but, like, that's just what I prefer. And so, like, yeah, so I was just, like, cognizant of not sort of putting myself up as, like, you know, some major voice or whatever. Like, I'm happy to just, like I sort of defer more to the guys insofar as, like, especially on questions that are not, like, on some level, I'm not American either. So it's like, I don't want to be this sort of, like, mouthy broad, just, like, mouthing off about everything. So it's like, there have only been a couple of occasions where I wasn't quite in lockstep with them anyway, reflexively. But there have been a couple of occasions where I saw, like, a few guys having, and again, none of them will argue with me in public because they're not tacky like that. But there have been times, at least two in the last, like, 12 or 18 months where I wasn't quite, like, I didn't instinctively see it the way they saw it. And it was only through seeing guys sort of, like, having a different opinion to me that I just went, oh, Amy, you need to shut the fuck up and like actually listen, because there's a pretty consistent theme here among like guys you really like admire and respect. And so that, so I guess I, to some extent, I sort of understand the impulse, but by the same token, that's like sort of almost political too, in a sense. It's sort of like, well, I'll defer to them because I see them as kind of,
well, you have,
or whatever,
I don't think guys understand interpersonal relationships as well as women in instinctively.
Yeah, it's sort of like it's like women's job, yeah, on some level.
And so you have been very good online at kind of almost explaining what's really going on here I don't think it's like, oh, is that what's happening? She's not really sad, yeah, or she's not, you know, or
no, or, I'm never emotional on the internet. Like, I don't give, like, no.
I don't know. The person who's trying to pull some emotion.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because guys need to be given permission to even see it that way. Because, like, some of the shit that I say, it's like, I'll have male friends and they'll be like, come on, that can't be. And I'm like, no, seriously. And they'll be like, oh, well, okay, I had no idea. It was very funny because actually when I was still on the left, I started having people telling me that I sounded like I was from the manosphere. And I was like, what the hell is the manosphere? I don't even know what this is. Like, what are you talking about? And then, like, actually the boys that I'm friends with now, like a couple of them are like, actually, like, it did write for a couple of the sort of more well-known, like, okay, manosphere blogs. But it's just like, actually, this is just stuff where it's like, well, this is reality based, and so like I was reality based, they were reality based, and so that sort of, you know, gets you criticized. But I just think, honestly, like, if women are going to weaponize like soft power, then I can weaponize it too, in like a good way. I can, if they're going to weaponize it for evil, I can weaponize it for good, and explain what they're doing. You know,
putting it into words, explaining what is going on, is actually a very useful, underrated thing, because most of the time guys are like, oh, she seems, you know, like the, you know, I must have made her sad. No. There's some type of manipulation going on for.
Well, it's also like a chivalry thing. You guys are like, like most guys I find are chivalrous. Like, they're not going to assume the worst. And like, that's a good thing. You don't want people to assume the worst. So that's why you don't exploit these things. But apparently not. I mean, I guess on some level with politics, it's like, you know, it is about power. So it is understandable that people are going to use whatever power they have, but at least one would think that, like, it just creates, I think, a degree of, like, it makes everything uncivilized if you weaponize, like, soft power and personal power in that way and make that political. Then suddenly everything's political, and then it is uncivilized. Like, you can't be civil, like, that just, but they did that, not me. Like, I didn't, you know, I didn't want it to be like that. If there could be sort of a way to cordon these things off, but it seems like my generation don't even recognize the notion of like professionalism, or having that, like, if the idea that there are like different selves that approach different things, you know, the idea that you might be like not your true self everywhere, the idea that you might need to be like respectful of somebody else's places or spaces and defer to them within them, is like something that I don't think my generation really, that's not how they roll. They're like, the same everywhere.
Hey, I've kept you a while, but I'll finish up with a couple of questions. And this one is, I don't think I've heard you been asked before. You mentioned before how, you know, people are, you know, there's some sort of civic religion and invested in politics in a big way. I mean, I think you grew up in a Catholic school and Catholic family. Do you still, is that still important to you, or do you still, like, is that, do you think that
Catholicism?
Provides? Yeah. Do you think that provides a bit of?
You know, I went to a Catholic school, like both primary and high school, with like 2 years at public school for OC class in year 5 and 6, but having gone to sort of Catholic primary and then a couple of years at the public school with like other bright kids, I got into a bunch of selective high schools, but I didn't, that wasn't for me. For some reason, I just knew that I didn't really like I didn't want that. I did want actually like a more I wouldn't have put it this way, but like a, you know, more like pastoral, or, you know, there was something else that I felt was more important about school other than just like, you know, factory farming results. And like, I'm lucky that I was always going to be fine results wise. Like, I'm clever enough that it's not going to make much difference whether I go to a subject. And so that, I think, for me was probably the most like stable and stabilizing institution growing up. Mm. Like, not just obviously, you know, the religion, but also like that school environment. Like, there was also like, even though I was clever and got great marks, I was also kind of naughty. Like, I was a bit rebellious. And so the fact that, like, you know, I talk to male friends who are very similar dispositionally to me, and like the consequences, if you like, for them were so much more severe. Whereas for me, it's sort of like you could, there was like, they'd sort of catch you and not let you fall and not, you know, severely punish me. Which I'm not sure that I would have had that at a public school or if I was a male or whatever. And so I'm very like grateful on some level to the fact that I was sort of given a decent bit of room that I perhaps maybe didn't, whether I deserved it or not, it's a whole other thing. But it was very much, I think, you know, it could have, I could have been in a very different position had I, you know, not had that level of like caring, like, supportive institution. And then I also think that, like, it's so funny because growing up, I thought I was an atheist, didn't think I believed in God, didn't think I was really into the whole Catholicism thing, even though I did all the sacraments. But like, it's actually only once you sort of hit your 20s that you realize like how thoroughly like that has actually influenced the person that you are, how much it, like, that you know, the person that you are is very much dependent upon having been raised a certain way, that that I really, like, more so probably now than even in my 20s, I sort of realized that, wow, actually, like, those values are ones that I do in fact subscribe to, whether I meant to or not. And actually, like, I totally, like, I, the whole, like, I'm an atheist thing was just corny nonsense. And, like, you know, you sort of grow out of all the rebellious crap, and then what's actually left there is like, wow, that's actually pretty meaningful to me. And like, I definitely think I've never seen people who have like real faith lean all the way into any of the crazy shit with politics or the woke nonsense or any of it. Like, because it just is like a much more stabilizing force, I think, for people. And I think also like people who have thought comprehensively about what it is to be like an okay person, like that's sort of what religion does on some level. It encourages you to think about these things, whereas for a lot of people just never think about things through like what it means to be a decent person or a good friend or a good neighbor or any of that. Like, so you can't really blame them for being a bit like idiotic or blind when these sort of crazy waves of hysteria come along. They just like go with the flow because they're human. Like, that's what we kind of do on some level. Like, if you're not, whereas if you've actually, you know, had, you've heard a homily about this particular thing or something, you know, analogous, you'll be like, oh, well, you know, this kind of reminds me of that Bible story or that thing that the priest said or that thing I learned in school. I don't know. It just gives you sort of a background that to like something to, I guess, a ballast in some sense, like just stabilizing, yeah. I think.
Yeah, at least it gives you a sense.
Very long-winded.
No, it's great, actually. I was kind of interested. I mean, it's a lot of, because people can get so caught up in the froth and bubble and the temporal debates and this, that, and the other. And I was curious as to some people that are a bit more grounded, they always tend to have had at least some exposure to religion, or even if it's, where they've been like militantly against it, at least they've been kind of wrestling with the ideas and understand that that these debates didn't just appear, you know, today. They've sort of been around for a lot longer. Hey, final question. I mean, you're an old Marxist, and what is to be done, Amy? Like, you know, we've had this big presidential election, and you know, I was very happy about it. It was kind of amazing and unexpected in some ways. And you would say that the online
community... I told you it was going to happen. I've been saying it for months, all right?
I'm much more naturally pessimistic, probably. But the...
You have little faith.
But, you know, like, things can still go bad.
like an election is as much as anything, it's sort of like it serves a narrative function. Like the idea that merely electing someone changes anyone's life is like not true.
it can help a bit.
I do think there is something actually, and I'd never thought about this till recently, but the last couple of years it occurred to me, especially I think as we're seeing so many of these like awful people who do awful things be just consistently rewarded for it. And something about that was just, it felt wrong. And it felt like, wow, I'm like, maybe I'm a total outlier. And like all the things that I thought were good and righteous, like I've just been tripping and nobody actually agrees with me. Like there is no like, you know, there is no right and wrong and I just need to get over it. And I do think there's something to be said for this sort of like redemption arc by which all the people who are doing like the wrong thing, like silencing people, stamping them out, like cheating and like forcing people to do things they shouldn't be forced to do, like all this nonsense, like very much I feel like sort of righting that wrong in the public like imagination on some level actually has an important role, particularly for people who don't think in moral terms and just pick up their morality almost reflexively from culture. There's something to be said for like the fact that the different people in Trump's cabinet are people who are basically like pilloried by their peers for speaking out for what was right at a time when it was not popular to do so. Like things like this, I do think there's some kind of value to that. And you know, the fact that Trump resoundingly won and won with like such a comprehensive dissection of society and just repudiated like every bullshit lie that the media had been telling for years. Like, I think there is some value to that. Like, I do want sort of the truth to win and like, you know, righteousness to like come out on top in the end. I know that's, I'm so corny right now, but like, I don't know. I'm value to that.
Preach on. It's a great story of like, you know, well, all these.
Yeah, I want to see good guys. Like, yeah, good guys win. Sometimes.
I think the Australian, establishment hasn't really appreciated the fact that the guys, like you said, that are now being put in charge of these big departments of state in the US have been, you know, they have been, including the president
so
himself.
Many of them-
They've like been in fire.
Like Jay Bhattacharya. Yes, all of us on the right. That's exactly the whole new right. Like I've noticed it amongst my peers, but also like the ones who are at the, yeah. And the other thing that I think is really cool actually is that like none of this was about like hardcore ideological, like, you know, fealty to some like fantasy ideas bullshit. Like half the people in Trump's cabinet were libtards until 5 minutes ago, but like actually what I think is almost more important than your professed like ideology, it's like, actually, do you have integrity? Are you a decent person? Can you tell right from wrong? Like, how do you treat the people around you? Are you reliable and honest? And like, are you, you know, when the chips are down, like who do you stick up for? Like I think those things are so much more telling than quote unquote political ideology, you know. And so
it's one unifying trait. It is that, well, the vast majority of the guys have, yeah, like you said, being pilloried for taking a particular unpopular stand that they believed in, you know. And it's nice to see that, you know, the truth will out in the end. And, yeah, I just don't think the Australian guys have really appreciated the fact that, you know, if they want to now in the future do some joint research with the National Institutes for Health that Jay Bhattacharya heads, there's not going to be any kind of like you know, stupid stuff in there about gender ideology or any stuff in there about, it'll just, it's the lack of patience for that stuff anymore, I think, because these guys have did suffer professionally significantly because they...
It's also just wrong to be, like, putting, like, I think lying and demanding that other people lie and they be a party to lies all the time. This is demoralizing.
Yeah.
This messes with you in ways that I think are unquantifiable. Like, if you are making people, like, insist that they call a man a woman or a woman a man and all this other stuff, it's just like, well, we're no longer operating in reality. We're already at farce. So how can I, like, learn things here at like a serious institution, or, you know, discovering, like, research, this, that, and the rest? Like, how are you supposed to take that seriously when you have, like, old mate over there who's calling himself a woman? Like, it's silliness. So you can't, I feel like it renders everything absurd. Like, I don't know. People shouldn't be forced to tell lies or sit and listen to lies and pretend lies are truth. I just think it has, like, the most corrosive influence on like, personal and public morality. You can't do that to people and expect it to be okay. Like, no. Anyway,
Anyway, I like to say it's like sometimes it takes it's a combination of not only intelligence but also courage, because sometimes...
Yeah, I think it's both. Yeah, absolutely.
And if you don't have both, it just doesn't work. Look, Amy, I really appreciate and have learned a lot from following you over the years online, and
thank you, that's really sweet.
Yeah, no, I respect all you do, and there's you know, there's lots of positives that come out from shit posters who, you know,
I've learned so much. I literally, like, I went to, like, you know, uni, and even at, like, the upper echelons of, like, you know, pretentious, like, Sydney Law School, all the rest of it, there is nowhere that I found half as intellectually stimulating as, like, right-wing anonymous Twitter. It's not even close. Like, my friends there are, like, the smartest guys I've ever met. Like, just...
You're just saying before we got cut that the smartest people online... It's chalk and cheese compared to the smartest university lecturer.
And moreover, like, I would have, like, I found that with my podcast, I could message any, like, renowned professor from any of the Ivy Leagues. None of them ever turned down, like, appearing on my show and having a talk. And so excited, and I think they were, I think, very thirsty to be able to actually, like, talk to people, because I suspect that what had been happening in I know that what had been happening in academia was so sort of stifling, and I think I think they sort of really enjoyed being able to actually have conversations that weren't so, like, stilted as, like, you know, whatever's going on campus these days.
And probably sick of, I don't know, clicking through LinkedIn and watching the banal sort of timelines that go on there.
Yeah.
That's a different world entirely. Yeah. Hey, mate, I know I've kept you a while. I really appreciate chatting to you, but I'll leave you to get back online and do your best.
Sorry, I'm so long-winded. Like,
really? No, you're not. It's
ask a question. All over the place.
You'll have to cut it down to short. Bite size when you do US
report. I could do talking points, but it's just not,
not your style, But if you get on Sky, I'm sure you'll.
Yeah, I'll have to practice that. Get better.
Really appreciate it. Thanks again.
Maybe. We'll see how it goes. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.